Hello, I'm Bruce Edwards, and welcome to this podcast produced by the International Monetary Fund. In this program, while oil prices have bounced back somewhat, the IMF's latest regional economic outlook for sub-Saharan Africa shows why energy exporters shouldn't get too excited.
The level of oil price that we see currently don't imply growth rates in the future that are high enough and that are anywhere near what we had seen before the oil slump.
Papa Ndiaye is head of research in the IMF's African department and says while the macroeconomic outlook for sub-Saharan Africa continues to strengthen thanks to ongoing reforms and stronger global growth, growth rates still fall short of what the region really needs. Ndiaye oversaw the writing of this latest regional economic outlook for sub-Saharan Africa. So this report shows that growth is clearly inching upwards, but is it enough to create the number of jobs that are required in the region, the increasing number of jobs that are required in the region?
Right. Well, thank you. So we are expecting the region to recover, to continue growing at a faster pace. We are expecting growth this year in 2018 to reach about 3.1% from 2.7% last year and to continue accelerate to about 4% over the medium term. What it means, given current demographic trends, is that in per capita terms, growth will be around 1.5%, and this is very low. It's low for the region to converge to more advanced economies or economies with higher income, but it's also too low to generate the jobs that are needed to absorb all the new entrants into the labor market. Mm. When we look at the United Nations forecast projections for demographics, the region will be adding about 20 million new entrants to the labor force per year.
Wow,
through 2035. And if you just take the numbers through, let's say, 2050, it would account for half the increase in global labor force. Push it further to 2100, then we'll be talking about the region accounting for over 35% of the global population. So these are very large demographic pressures that pose significant challenges, but also are great opportunities for sub-Saharan Africa and for the rest of the world. And what it means that though is like for the region to be able to harness all this demographic dividends, as we like to call it, it will need to implement significant reforms to generate sustained high growth to create those jobs. And that means putting in place the reforms that are needed to boost the private investment, for example, putting infrastructure that's needed, putting more diversification in oil exporting countries, for example. Mm. So it's the report goes into many of these aspects and try to see what the potential gains could be. For example, we have done just very simple exercise to look at by how much growth could increase, medium-term growth could increase if sub-Saharan African countries implement the reform that we recommend. And we show that we could move from a baseline scenario of 4% medium-term growth to 6% medium-term growth. And just doing that would help create more jobs. And I think our calculations show that we would be around 16 to 18 million jobs, which is much closer to absorbing the new entrants to the labor market. Mm.
So one of the things that's contributing to this increase in growth is the commodities. It seems that the commodities slump is easing, at least sporadically. Mm. What does that mean for the larger economies in the region, South Africa, Nigeria? Mm.
Well, I think for oil exporters, it's very good news, or energy exporters in general. Our forecast right now assume much higher oil prices than what we had back in April, for example. Oil prices have gone up quite significantly. And that's a big relief for many oil exporting countries in the region. And as you know, these countries have gone through a very difficult time since the large decline in oil prices in 2014. And we are expecting that pressure is going to ease a bit, and these positive terms of trade, as we call it, will help support growth in those countries.
But do you worry that this might distract governments who've been working hard to find ways of diversifying their economies, as they should?
I think countries should use this opportunity to make headway into this diversification agenda. It takes time, as most structural reforms for the payoffs to materialize. And that's a reason why we need to start now to try to diversify these economies. What has happened in the past 5 years in these very commodity-intensive countries just show the importance of having a more diversified economy, because a big shock can just throw the economy into recession. So it's very important that countries use this opportunity and the breathing space to further advance the diversification agenda.
But do you think it's more difficult to make the country authorities focus on diversification when they see oil prices creeping up again?
Well, that we see as a risk. It's not really our baseline scenario. I think most country authorities in the region are committed to advancing the reform. Some of them have already started implementing some of the needed reforms, including the adjustment, just the fiscal adjustment that was required to live up to these new or lower oil prices. But the level of oil prices that we see currently don't imply growth rates in the future that are high enough and that are anywhere near what we had seen before the oil slump. Right now, if you look at our growth projections for oil exporters and energy exporters, growth is either at half of where it was before 2014 or one-third of what it was then. And for a country like Nigeria, in per capita terms, it means very, very low numbers, either negative per capita growth. So there is really a necessity to advance reforms to lift medium-term growth.
Regardless of rising oil prices.
Yes.
Yeah. So while trade conflicts are escalating on the global stage, Sub-Saharan Africa has managed somehow to broker a free trade agreement for the region. What will be the impact of this new African continental free trade area?
Yeah. This is a most welcome development, and we are studying it and trying to assess what the potential implications will be. And it has a lot of potential benefits, large benefits for the region. When you look at studies out there, there are references to increases in income per capita of 130%, depending on how it is done and whether the decline in non-tariff barriers that this agreement will imply is accompanied by also some improvement or decline in non-tariff barriers, and some of the other factors like the big infrastructure gaps that the region is suffering from, making headways towards reducing those gaps will increase the benefits from this free trade agreement. So we are planning to look deeper into this issue in the next regional economic outlook for April 2019. What I can say right now is that in the long term, we have no doubt it's going to be a positive for the region, for the countries that are involved. But the transition may entail some costs, right? Because labor will likely be dislocated in some areas to go to other areas. Capital will move from one country to another, one sector to another, one industry to another. We have seen it in other countries. And it's important for policymakers to ensure that that transition happens smoothly and that the workers or the labor that's gets all the support that it needs to adjust to this new agreement. Hmm.
So another thing I'd like to ask you about is this, because you do mention it in the report, is the Sustainable Development Goals that the UN established in 2015. I don't think anybody would question the importance of those goals. But clearly, it will be a challenge for some of these countries in sub-Saharan Africa, especially those that are highly indebted at this point, to find the resources to achieve those goals. What do you think the chances are, or how realistic is it, do you think, that these countries will be able to achieve those sustainable development goals?
Mm. I mean, as you pointed out, these are important goals, and countries have made good progress in the past. If you look at the regions during its period of very strong growth in the 2000 to 2014, we have seen significant improvements in development indicators or social indicators, including in terms of per capita income, including the educational attainment, the mortality, infant mortality rates, life expectancy in general. So significant progress was made, but as you pointed out, there is a lot to do. Attaining the Sustainable Development Goals by 2030 is a challenge. Our analysis, or the analysis done by the Fiscal Affairs Department, shows that for countries to attain these goals, it will require an additional 14% of GDP in spending,
which is significant,
especially against the backdrop of significant debt vulnerabilities in many countries. So that basically implies greater, perhaps, a sense of urgency or a need for countries to advance reform, both reforms to raise domestic revenue, because through that, they could increase the resources that they need to invest in education, invest in infrastructure, capital, and physical capital. But they can also lift growth through those reforms, and that will help reduce and narrow this gap, and this 14% of GDP in spending. So the gap would almost halve if countries manage to grow much faster. But attaining these sustainable development goals remains a challenge, a significant challenge.
That was Papa Njai, head of the Regional Studies Division in the IMF's African Department, talking about the latest regional economic outlook for sub-Saharan Africa. You can read the full report at imf.org. And if you like this podcast, subscribe on iTunes or on your favorite podcast app. Just search for IMF Podcasts. You can also now follow us on Twitter at IMF_podcast.